You're listening to the Arsenal for Democracy, forging and preparing a new generation for leadership. Now, here's your host, Bill Humphrey.
For 91.3 FM and WVUD HD1 Newark in the great state of Delaware, I'm Bill Humphrey, and thanks for listening. I'm coming to you on September 21st, 2014, from my studio in Newton, Massachusetts. This week on the show's 100th episode, Nate and Persephone join me to discuss Scotland's vote against independence, as well as university compliance issues for the Americans with Disabilities Act. All that is coming up right now. Arsenal for Democracy is usually recorded in studio every Sunday and is available for download on Wednesdays at arsenalfordemocracy.com and from iTunes. We air the show in Delaware on 91.3 FM and stream it from WVUD.org on Wednesdays at 6 p.m. Eastern. Follow us on Twitter at AFD Radio or like us on Facebook. This is the Arsenal for Democracy. Welcome to Arsenal for Democracy. I'm your host, Bill Humphrey. Joining me in studio is Nate.
Hey, Bill.
And on the line from Michigan is Persephone.
Hi there.
And the first story that we're going to talk about is looking at the Scotland referendum, which happened last week. We're going to talk a little bit about the outcome there, some of the pros and cons of things that developed, the what's next for Scotland and the United Kingdom, and also what this means for some of the other areas of Europe that we've previously talked about that also have sort of separatist aspirations. So obviously, I'm sure everyone has seen the headlines, that the Scotland voted against independence, not by maybe as big of a margin as it looked like it was going to be a year and a half ago, but by a bigger margin than some of the polls had indicated. That was pretty good, in my opinion, although I know, I know some folks who were supporting the other side. But, the basic thing that we know for sure is that the UK is going to stick together for at least a while longer. And now the debate in Britain is going to move toward this issue of whether or not there's going to be more devolution of powers or Devo Max, where they're going to be giving more powers to Scotland, more control over their own affairs, particularly with regard to taxation and spending. And then, also potentially going to be changing the situation for England within the Union, because some of the English MPs have long said since, the late 1970s or so, why is it that we don't get to vote on Scottish affairs, but we do get to, they get to vote on our affairs? Obviously, part of the reason for that is that England is the biggest part of the Union. So, at that point, you don't really have a government anymore if you are completely breaking off and giving everyone their own setup and that sort of thing. But that's sort of going to be the ongoing debate here. But, the part of the big argument that was being made by the advocates of the Yes campaign, the independence campaign in Scotland, was they were saying, look, we have our own revenue. And there were some disputes over how much revenue that was going to be, actually. But they said, we have our own revenue. We're way more to the left politically than the rest of the country. And we want to spend on, we want to reverse some of these cutbacks that we've seen. We want to spend more on social welfare programs. And they made the case that, this will be transferring power from the elites to the people. I'm a little bit skeptical of that argument. I think that it more likely would just be transferring power from the elites in London or, at Westminster to the elites in the cities in Scotland. I mean, a couple of the cities there were the big yes supporters, and then almost the entire rest of Scotland voted no on this. And that was why it was such a big margin by the end of it against independence. I mean, there's a lot of economic ties back and forth, but it's just like, okay, there's certain people that know that they're going to benefit from independence, and they don't really seem to care that much if everyone else gets screwed over. And so that was sort of a concern for me. But I also just, I was starting to wonder, and this is something we've talked about previously on the show, but this issue of how much ethno-nationalism do we really want to be promoting in this day and age? That hasn't really been working out too well for a lot of areas. Yeah, there's some problems in the past between England and Scotland, but a lot of that is pretty far in the past relative to, other oppressions that we see going on in other parts of the world. And this is a political debate, essentially, rather than a, we're being oppressed and conquered type of thing, in my opinion anyway. I know some folks disagree, but it's like, is this the direction that we really want to be headed, with regard to saying that everyone should be kind of getting control of their own taxes and spending in their own little ethnic group or identity, nationalist identity, and that, you know, there's no, they don't want to share the money with anybody else. And I know that's not quite what was going on in Scotland, but it's something that's a little bit worrisome, I think. Persephone, did you have any thoughts on this?
Oh, yeah, I don't think, I mean, honestly, I understand why people are very drawn to this idea of, like, independent Scotland, especially from the outside. I can understand why people think, oh, well, it's this culture, and, like, they really focus on the cultural aspect. I can understand that, right? I mean, it's like a sort of, it looks good to talk about this is a culture that it's about preserving the culture. And but once it gets to be a political issue, an economic issue, I really don't think that there's any grounds for claiming separation. Honestly, I don't think that the cultural thing is a good enough reason. I think that what we see here is the use of culture to promote an economically driven fragmentation. And we've seen this, we've talked about this before with Catalonia and with other things and on the show previously. But I really think it's important to emphasize that as sentimental as nationalist discourse might seem to be, it's really about one region that's more economically successful kind of throwing its weight around and trying to break off because it doesn't want to be part of a country that isn't doing as well as it is. Now, you can maybe some people believe that that's a justifiable reason. I'm inclined to think that not only is it not justifiable, it's actually against their self-interest. I mean, once a region breaks free, they have to establish their own economy, you know, their own currency. They have to, you know, create trade partnerships that previously had been handled by the federal government. They have to, you know, create this whole new set of rules and regulations. And honestly, inevitably, they'll find themselves in a reduced economic position to where they were before. At least that's my opinion, and that's how I see it.
Now, to your culture point, this is something that you and I have talked about a little bit on the show before, but also pretty extensively off air. You know, there was this argument that was being thrown around of, you know, and you were alluding to this, you know, there's a Scottish identity, there's a Scottish nationalism, there's a Scottish culture, and it is very unique. But on the other hand, you know, within England itself, there are various areas, you know, your London and your Cornwall and your Kent and your Sussex and your Manchester area and Yorkshire area and the very far north. And by the time you get up, you know, very far, like Northumbria and all that, and you get close to the border of Scotland, some of those areas historically anyway have more in common with the adjacent areas across the border in Scotland than they do with London. And, you know, there's it's sort of a continuum of language. And this is something that you and I have definitely talked about with regard to the Iberian Peninsula, which is that there's this debate, you know, and we'll get to this in a little bit more, I think, in depth shortly, but with like Catalonia and various dialects in Spain or even Portuguese, these all sort of came from a very fragmented thing where every village practically or every town had their own completely different dialect. And the only way that a quote unquote identity is formed is by varying levels of central direction that say this is the official identity that must be promulgated, you know, from the biggest city to the smallest village. I mean, that's how Portuguese as a language diverges pretty significantly from the rest of the, you know, Spanish dialects that end up becoming Spanish or some of the other ones that are still around as their own dialects, is that at one point the monarch in Portugal said, this is the official version of Portuguese. Everyone has to learn this. And I think it's similar, like in England, there has been a homogenization gradually, but I mean, there used to be a huge divergence in terms of dialect between, you know, Yorkshire up, you know, far in, you know, relatively far up in the north versus some of the areas along, say, the English Channel or so. I mean, the idea that Scotland has a completely separate identity and England has a completely separate identity, I mean, those are both manufactured identities fundamentally, I think anyway. And, you know, that's not necessarily inherently wrong, but it's a little bit of a questionable basis for we should definitely be independent. I mean, it wasn't like, unlike with, say, Ireland, England did not conquer Scotland and that's how it became part of the union. There was a voluntary decision made to form a union and they already had a unified, you know, they already had the same monarch on both thrones. And maybe there was some economic coercion involved, but this was not a military conquest. This was a decision to say, well, we're probably more similar than we are different. Let's form a, you know, big country together so that we can do certain things. Nate?
Yeah, well, they conquer Scotland a little bit, but I think it was ultimately just intertwining the royal families and just basically maintaining a political alliance in that way. And that's, you know, it's lasted for the past couple hundred years just because it's convenient in a lot of ways for both countries. There's economic benefits, there's, you know, political and, you know, social benefits as well. So, you know, just I think it was, I don't know if it's necessarily the right decision or not, but it might have been the sort of the safe decision, if that makes any sense, because just by even by having this referendum at all, you're putting a little bit of pressure on the UK government to, you know, at least listen or concede more to Scottish demands for various types of autonomy. But at the same time, you're actually not taking the full step of, you know, moving completely away from the UK into a completely new country, and then all the difficulties that would probably come with that. You know, it's going to take a time to have an independent functioning economy. They're just, it seems like there was opportunities for Scotland to take a step back, but because they did not approve this referendum, once again, they're now sort of just stuck in limbo. And if they can use this as leverage to maybe improve some of their negotiating positions and get some of the things that they actually wanted to achieve with the referendum in the first place, then, you know, it might end up okay for everyone involved. Now, if they can't do that, then it's sort of maybe a waste of time or something like that. But, you know, it would be interesting to see an independent Scotland, but at the same time, you know, it's still a very distinct place culturally. So, you know, still go and visit there and still feel like Scotland.
Right. I think that they have room within the Union to have their own, you know, identity and things like that. And I also just, I was frustrated by the notion of, well, Scotland's more leftist and we hate the conservatives, so we're going to leave and form our own country. And it's like, well, what kind of weird tantrum rationale is that? Because, like, I was concerned that if Scotland left, this was going to destroy the Labour Party in the rest of Britain, the rest of the United Kingdom, like, for the next 10 to 15 years, if not longer. I mean, it's true. England is a lot more conservative than Scotland. But overall, there is a balance made possible by having Scotland in it. And they're saying, well, we don't want to be in part of these foreign wars. We don't want to be part, you know, this and that with the foreign policy. And we don't want to be, you know, making all these cutbacks and things like that. Well, you know where Scotland's role in this is not leaving the Union. It's staying in the Union and providing that leverage to the political left to say there's a large constituency in this country that disagrees with the direction that we're going in, rather than just taking their ball and going home. You know, that this is the method that's going to allow them to not just shape their own affairs, which is going to be enhanced now, I think, but also to shape the affairs of the Union as a whole. And that's, in my opinion, better for the world. I mean, maybe they're not thinking about it like that, and maybe they don't feel that responsibility, but I'd much rather have a United Kingdom with a very leftist Scotland kind of mitigating some of the UK's more negative tendencies on the world stage than to have just a super right-wing UK that's diminished but is still trying to, you know, angrily flex its power here and there. Persephone, did you want to talk about any of the things that Nate and I have just brought up, or some of these identity and language and culture issues?
Yeah, with regards to your language point, I think that your point about standardization is really a good one. We take a lot of things for granted, you know, that this is just how things have to be. Where language is concerned, it's really not that clear cut. I mean, up until the kinds of standardization processes you were describing with, like, Portugal, for instance, in countries that didn't have that kind of standardization, you didn't have distinct languages in the same way that we understand that today. And even today, you know, you have places that have different dialects that have their own system of rules and that have their own way of speaking. And, you know, there's an argument for saying they aren't the same language. Or, you know, you can look at how, you know, there are some things that are considered different languages that are mutually comprehensible. And I think that it's really interesting. This is less relevant with regards to Scotland, obviously, but I think it's interesting how we take for granted these are certain situations in which an area will want its independence. If they have a common culture, then they deserve independence. If they have a common language, that, you know, is apart from that of the main state, then they deserve independence. If they have economic success, then they deserve independence. And we just take for granted that, as it's framed by theorists of nationalism, every nation should have a state. We take that for granted, that just because a place has an established identity, it should be independent and it should have its own state apparatus. But you've just pointed out one of the huge reasons that that doesn't necessarily work as a policy, because it homogenizes the existing states. And you end up in a situation where you have these little bubbles, you know, that have their own views that are apart from the larger state. And it just creates a situation where you get one political ideology that just completely dominates. And I think that's something that people should be wary of.
Right. And I mean, there's so many examples all over of, you know, it's like, oh, well, you know, this is, they're oppressing us. They're trying to take away our language. They're trying to do this and that. And it's like, well, but you're looking at the few holdouts that managed to resist, often militarily, and, you know, sort of a mutual cycle of resistance leading to violent crackdowns and things like that. But the areas that did not resist, I guess you can say it's unfortunate when there's cultural loss. You know, if certain areas of, say, France, for example, used to have a lot stronger dialects that were completely, you know, different from what was going on and, you know, people were speaking in Paris. And it's not great, but on the other hand, it certainly makes it a lot easier when you have everyone in the country speaking the same language and everything. Economically, that's certainly beneficial. I think there's a balance to be had there of saying, well, we want to respect and allow people's cultures to continue to be distinguished from one another. But on the other hand, I mean, some of this is just sort of a natural tendency, but it's also like you don't necessarily need to have a policy of giving everyone their own country just because they have an identity. I feel like we've tried that. That's been the experiment of the 19th century and into the 20th century, giving everyone their own nation state, you know, based on nationalism and stuff like that. And that has sort of led to a lot of pain and suffering because everyone just aligns, you know, based on their little sort of macro national level clan. And then they can't work together. And kind of the other trend in the opposite direction now, especially with the European integration, is saying, can we all, in fact, live together peacefully and figure out equitable distributions of taxes and resources without having our completely separate our own countries and everything? Can we cooperate with each other even though we're not from the same nationality? We don't speak the same language. But you've got these little pockets, as we've talked about before, that aren't really following that model. I think we should probably segue to Catalonia here to close out the segment. They were sort of trying to capitalize on all the attention the Scottish referendum was getting. They're holding their own referendum illegally without the permission of the Spanish central government. And, you know, at least in Scotland, maybe they were trying to take their ball and go home, but they were trying to take their money to actually spend it on social programs and help poor people and stuff. Catalonia, as far as I understand the situation, and this is, I'm sure, a bit of an oversimplification, but they seem to be trying to take their money home from the central government because they have so much of it and they don't want to spend it on the poor in the rest of Spain. So they just want to hang out and, you know, with their own money and go galt, basically. But Persephone, do you have any updates for us on, you know, or updated thoughts anyway on the situation in Catalonia and their upcoming very controversial referendum?
Yeah, I would say your analysis is spot on, first of all. In terms of the, you know, updates on their referendum, they are definitely taking advantage of this to say, look, they got their vote, why don't we get ours? And, you know, this is why we're having our vote. I think that actually Rajoy should be concerned that his disagreement on this issue and not allowing them to have a vote will push people towards independence, although I certainly think his decision, I understand, although I disagree with him politically on most issues, I certainly understand his decision on this one. Now, I think that what we're going to see in Catalonia is people responding to not being given a voice federally. You're going to see a lot of people that are for separatism using folkloric propaganda, if you will, and you know, reminding people of the language and you know, probably bringing up memories from the Spanish Civil War and the subsequent dictatorship of Franco, which repressed the language a lot. So I think we'll be seeing a lot of painful memories being evoked.
Nate, do you have any closing thoughts on any of this?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of just very longstanding and significant differences between various regions in Spain, whether it's the Basques, the Catalans, whatever. You know, Spain is sort of a country that was duct taped together at one point, and it's still sort of holding together, you know, more or less all these centuries later. I don't necessarily know if it would be the best idea, just in terms of the Catalans, in terms of their economy, to split off. I think you might consider it might be a similar situation we talked about in Scotland. Also, you have to worry and wonder about whether Barcelona would be allowed to play in La Liga if they were in a different country. I assume they would make some sort of exemption. But, you know, that's always a thing to consider as well, because it's pretty important to those people over there in Catalonia. I probably don't think it's the best idea, but there might be some sort of vote on it, whether it's official or not. So, you know, I guess if something big goes down there, we'll probably be talking about it in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, I mean, it just, all of this just seems like it's this although, you know, the first thing that you should try is more autonomy. That's been given in both of these cases. And then, you know, if there's an independence referendum, it needs to be agreed on by both sides. I mean, that was one of the big advantages in Scotland, was that both sides agreed to it. And that was really positive. And then, of course, we saw lots of positive outcomes in Scotland with, in terms of really high voter participation, really mobilizing a lot of people. That was really great for grassroots activism. And that's going to pay a lot of dividends in the future on other issues as well. On the scale of separatism, this is better than what's going on in eastern Ukraine, for example, right? But in general, it's like, what is the point at this point of leaving these things? What's, you know, because it was like Scotland saying that they were going to leave the UK so they could have a different foreign policy, kick out all the nuclear weapons, but also join NATO. Like, what possible point does that have? Because at that point, it's the same foreign policy, and you still have to be protected by nuclear weapons, for example. So it's like, you know, we've seen the benefits of sort of working together and having more central ability. I mean, you kind of scale up these capacities that of in order to provide services, because it's an economy of scale. And it also just seems like the direction that we need to be heading as humanity worldwide at this point is toward more cooperative integration and things like that, less of, you know, some of these sort of nationalistic identity things. I mean, obviously there's a role for that, because you don't want to ignore it if, for example, you know, one particular population is being, you know, whether it's militarily oppressed or just really neglected by, you know, the government and the social services and things like that. But where that's not an issue, the trend should be we need to find a way to work together within an existing sort of central system, because it's just going to make it so much more complicated and kind of like exclusionary if you're going kind of artificially constructing these separate identities that don't really need to be separated out. That's my opinion anyway.
Yeah, I would agree with a lot of that. I think that, yeah, the, as you said, it's something being constructed. It's not as natural as people would like us to think, and it doesn't necessarily have any long-term benefit.
Yeah, and if we gave every single region that had like a separate identity its own country, I mean, that would just be chaos. So, you know, where do you draw the line at this point? I think you've got to make a, there's got to be a really high sort of burden of proof of like they need their own country. It's of existential importance that they get their own country. Arsenal for Democracy will be right back in just a moment with more.